Hey, you may have heard that there's a war going on the other side of the planet. It's kind of scary. The pictures are absolutely horrific. But there is a component to this where the church can be involved, and the church is involved, thank God. Today we're talking to Judy Gooch, who is part of an effort to assist and perhaps resettle Ukrainian refugees. Stay tuned. We got a really, really good one for you. It seems like it's a far-off place. It seems like it's something that doesn't really have the potential of affecting us directly. But, you know, it's a really small world out there today. We know exactly what's going on in other parts of the world. We know we can see those things. We can experience them practically. By the way, TV brings people into our lives. Not only that, but we have direct contact through all kinds of sources. I mean, I remember last year we talked to David Fouché, who was working with Ukrainian employees at the very moment. He was on a Zoom call. He was there in the very moment with Ukrainian colleagues as the war broke out, as Russia invaded. It's amazing. And if you remember that, if you saw that conversation, that was a Facebook Live. It was powerful. We brought in guests from the other side of the world. Today's guest is not so far away, but you know, we're gonna talk to her anyway. First of all, I'm gonna say hi to Mark. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's been a good day, a good week, actually. Beautiful weather. Feels like fall. Sunday morning, I walked out to greet people, and it actually felt like fall. I've been so excited for just that experience.
I was out of town this week, and I came back in, and I saw, you know, leaves kind of covering the sidewalks here in my neighborhood, and I was like, ooh, I can't wait. It's so good. Finally.
Finally. Pumpkin spice in the air. You
know? Oh, I know. Yeah.
Not that that's a good thing for some of us, but yeah, definitely there.
So that's a really important topic of conversation, Mark. How do you feel about pumpkin spice?
In all honesty, I like my coffee to taste like coffee. I know that's a radical, edgy kind of thing to say, but I prefer nothing in coffee but coffee.
Well, but there's also, you know, there's not just coffee and flavored coffee. There's pumpkin spice everything.
Yes, there is. You know, the new
cookies.
Pumpkin spice deodorant out this week, I think. it's an uncomfortable place to be, that's for sure.
I kind of, you know me, I don't go along with most fads. I kind of, you know, pull up an eyebrow whenever, you know, something's really popular, but you know, I can handle a little bit of pumpkin spice. It's I'm kind of neutral on it.
Neutral?
I don't get excited about it like a lot of people do.
We have our token staff member who is a huge pumpkin spice lover of all things fall, which is Shelby. Shelby Fowler, and Shelby and Andrew brought their
How
dog.
How does that not surprise
and
me?
I know, but Shelby and Andrew brought their dogs to the Blessing of the Animals Sunday afternoon, and that was fun. They were everyone was dressed in fall colors in their family. I thought that was very appropriate.
That's a great segue, because I was going to ask you how was it? I mean, that, you know, you spoke last week about how that's one of your favorite things. So what's, you know, how was it?
It was wonderful, of course. It was fewer animals this year. All dogs except one perfect, beautiful cat. And big dogs, 120-pound lap dogs, Rottweilers and small little rat terriers. Thinking about you, Terry Pfeiffer. Terry Pfeiffer has a dog that will attack anything of any size to protect her. This little rat terrier, you could not get near this woman because He had that rat terrier chihuahua. He's a mix with chihuahua, and it had that kind of thing going on. When you just look at Terry, it would look at this dog would look at you like, I'll take you right now. I'll take you. But we had some dogs that were older, and I mean that nearing the end of their life, and you get to say Thanksgiving to God and pray blessing on this dog and what it's brought to the family. We've had dogs that were puppies and young and fresh. It's just a wonderful day.
That's great. And you know, as the president says, the pandemic is over now. So you could actually didn't have to have masks. But last year you did. I mean, all the dogs came masked, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're very quarantined.
And the
here.
cats did masks.
We
as
made
well.
The That's... cats shave down, and small turnout. Surprisingly, who would have thought?
All right, man. What else is going on in the church?
We're getting ready
days.
To have our another XYZ, the Extra Years of Zest, a luncheon on the 12th next Wednesday. Reservations due Monday at noon. And Sam Venable, for those who grew up in Knoxville, Sam Venable, longtime writer and editor at the Knoxville News Sentinel, is going to be the featured guest, and looking forward to that. And then, actually, there's a lot of momentum around here. We're building up toward our outdoor worship celebration. We're going to have all the worship services combined into one out on the front lawn, and that's going to be Sunday, the 30th of October.
You pull up a big flatbed truck or something like that, you know,
exactly
and
what
set up
do.
Everything, you know. And
Noble Metals flatbed truck, which is, it's exactly what I want. It is so unpretentious. It is real life, and we throw the band up there, and it's the fall
hay
festival.
Bales.
I hope. I don't know. That's a good question. I like
caught
that
you
idea.
Without being. I caught you speechless, sir.
You did. I love that idea. And then we're gonna have the fall festival. So inflatables, hot dogs, a chili cook-off. So people can bring chili, but bring lawn chairs and come join us on Sunday the 30th.
Sounds amazing. Sounds great. All right. Well, who is our guest today? First of all, we do need to talk about our sponsor. We just need to say something about our sponsor just, you know, for a second. It was really cool that it was 2 weeks ago? We
it
had
was, yeah.
My namesake, Steve Martin, who grew up in the Church of Christ tradition. And now he was talking about, you know, kind of some ways he's seeing things differently and so on. But the Church of Christ officials actually heard the podcast and reached out to us as a sponsor.
And I love that. Building bridges across denominations. That's
building
us.
Bridges.
That
we're
is
ecumenical.
Us.
We are ecumenical.
Ecumenical. Love
even
that.
When those denominations that we're ecumenical with don't really want to be ecumenical.
We're
looking forward to that
sponsor.
We do. It's gonna be fun. So yeah, tell us about our guest today.
Oh, we are really blessed to have Judy with us. Judy Gooch, who is a member of First United Methodist Church. Yay. She and her husband, Warren, attend the 8:45 services most Sunday mornings. She's actually by trade an interior designer, Judy Gooch Interiors. You can find that, find her around there and doing work there. But over the last, really for the last 25 years or so, she's been very active in community affairs. And recently she became, I don't know, just being her personality, Judy became the front person for this effort to settle and some Ukrainian refugees that had made their way to Oak Ridge. And she has been our congregation and many congregations in this community, kind of the primary source for information. So Judy, I am so pleased that you are with us. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. This is a pleasure.
Oh, I hope you feel that way after it's done. just never can tell. Well, just to catch everybody up, exactly what Steve said earlier, we know what's going on the other side of the world. Over 6,000 civilian deaths in Ukraine. 70,000 Russian soldiers killed, 10,000 Ukrainian soldiers killed, I had to look it up this morning. Over 13 million refugees moving out of Ukraine, the great majority of those into Poland, but into all kinds of nations around, and quite a few are making their way to the United States. I guess that's my first question is, what happened? What's the story that brought this Ukrainian family, or families, it's actually more than one family, to Oak Ridge?
Okay, well, a lot of people ask me how I got involved with them in the first place. And in April, toward the end of April, the wonderful couple that owns Razzleberries, Baldeck and Alana, actually sponsored a fundraiser over at our amphitheater in Oak Ridge, an outdoor performance. And they got bands and dance groups, and it was just a fundraiser. I think they ended up raising like $30,000-something, and they were sending their money back to the money that was raised back to Poland, where they were originally from, because so many Ukrainians had obviously fled to Poland, and Poland was being inundated with, you know, hundreds of thousands of refugees. Well, they had been here, I think, for a few days, maybe a week. And some of their neighbors brought them to that event that night. So that's how I met them. Somebody came up and said, hey, come meet the Ukrainian refugees that are here. And I went, what? So Orne and I just got up from our seats and went over, and some of them spoke English enough to understand East Tennessee's version of English, and which I have a very strong version of. And I was just enthralled that they were here, for one. And two, we had seen these awful pictures, like you said, on the screen of and felt like many other people, what can we do to help? You know what? I mean, we did give money to that cause that night. But and then all of a sudden it dawned on me, Ukraine has come to us. We've been wondering what we could do for Ukraine, and Ukraine has actually showed up right in our backyard. And it's just one of those aha moments that I felt the Lord laid on my heart that night, that you need to find out ways that you can help. So I talked to them that night, and then the following Wednesday, we were having our last Altrusa meeting, which is a wonderful civic club in Oak Ridge, and it has been made up of largely women that we meet at lunch twice a month and always have a good meeting that we learned about something civically or needs in the area or whatever. But I went over before the meeting on that Wednesday morning. I knew where they lived because I talked to one of the neighbors that had brought them, and they live in Emery Heights, and knocked on the door and said, hi, I'm Judy. I met you the other night at the concert. And they said, oh yeah, we remember. Come on in. And then I learned their story that night, how they got here, how they were in the house in Emery Heights, and how they, you know, how they have settled in. There were eight of them that initially came, and they were brought here to specifically to Oak Ridge by Grant Cephalo. Grant is a fella that works for a, from what I understand, a uranium cleanup site. And so he goes all over the world, but he particularly had spent a lot of time in Ukraine. Back when Chernobyl blew up, apparently he was very involved in some of the cleanup efforts there. He still works other spots in the United States, but he had lived in Oak Ridge, as well as Hanford, Washington, another side of a, you know, national lab. And he actually had decided that he was going to slow down. I'm not sure. He's kind of a grandfather-like figure to them. And move back and live in Ukraine and just kind of work for his company called Northwind as an as-needed basis. In other words, he'd go back and work for 6 months and then come back to Ukraine. He had moved to Ukraine in December. And of course, the war broke out in January or end of January or February.
Right.
But he
not
knew
the best timing in the world. That's
no,
you know, it's
correct.
Rather unfortunate.
Yeah, and he knew these people. In fact, he had worked with some of them. There's one of the ladies' names is, we call her Tanya. Her name is Tatiana, which I think is just such a beautiful name. But she's kind of shortened it now that she's moved here and goes by Tanya. But she had worked with Grant, and she still works remotely a little bit for this company called the Chernobyl Research and Development Institute. She does data collection for them.
And that's a really important thing for us to point out. These families we're talking about are not, I mean, these are professional people.
They all have their master's degrees.
Yeah, great skills. I was so impressed with that.
All four of the women that are here have their master's degrees. So she still gets up in the middle of the night and does some virtual conference calls and works till about lunchtime because of the time difference. She doesn't work every day, but most days she does. And so she's just had a minimal income through that. Her husband is still there. He works also in some way with something related to what her job was there. And I'm sorry, I don't know all the exact...
Not that you could probably know and explain it and I wouldn't get it. So that's okay.
Yeah, and they kind of lived in the area between Kiev and Chernobyl. But Grant was, he thought that the war was really going to happen. So he came on back to the United States, and he said he felt like, as he thought about what communities that he had lived in, what would be the most receptive community to the Ukrainian families coming back here. So he felt like Oak Ridge would be the best match because we have a lot of international people here. So he chose Oak Ridge. He came back and bought this house. He contacted these three different families and said, if you want to send your wives and your children here, I have a place where they can live safely until this war is over.
What a wonderful gift to offer.
What a gift. Yes,
Judy,
what a gift.
I want to jump in and ask you a question. This is rather technical, but when I've done refugee resettlement work before, the refugees came in through the International Organization of Migration, then to Church World Service, then to Bridge Refugee Services, and then, you know, resettled by the church. And it was a very specific kind of thing that the government allows, and governments all over the world allow, where you claim refugee status. You say, hey, if I go back, I will be persecuted. I will be killed. I will be, you know. And
right.
That's not the pathway this time.
They came in under something called humanitarian parole. And that is because he was able to get them out the most quickly because of that. At the time that the war first started, Tatiana or Tanya and her two girls had already... Grant had been in communication with them, and he said, you better get out of where you live right now and at least go to eastern Ukraine. They had already gone to eastern Ukraine to just kind of see what happened. So they were not in the exact war zone. However, the other two families that initially came were. One of the girls lived in Kyiv, and she has a little three-year-old boy named Artem. And it's actually her partner. They're not married, but they had this son together. And so they decided that her partner was going to go ahead and take them to the border. She actually had a sister that already lived in Poland. So they loaded up in their car, and she said it was a very harrowing experience leaving because bombs were dropping around. That's when Kyiv was first being bombed. They lived in a flat, which is, you know, a multi-story apartment building. And so they just grabbed what they could put in backpacks and some food for a day and water bottles and that kind of thing and left. Their passports, of course, but they didn't really have visas. It took them 12 hours to finally get to the border, which would have been a six-hour trip if they had just been able to drive. She said many times they would get to a bridge. The bridge had been bombed, so they had to go around and find a different way to get to where they were going. the most descriptive thing she has said is bombs were dropping close enough to them that when they would hit the ground, their car actually bounced off the ground. Wow. And you can imagine just how scary that was.
That would be the point. I can't imagine how hard.
Yeah, for all of them. And the little 3-year-old.
Nothing in my life's experience would have
prepared for that moment. And the children in the car with you.
Yeah. And so they did make it to the border. They were boarded onto a bus while they were in holding. But the bus was there for 18 hours and never went anywhere. And so she said, we ran out of the water, and she said she was not trying to drink water. She was trying to save the water for her little son and, you know, whatever little food they were trying to ration it out. So that was just very difficult with a small child who's hungry and thirsty and not understanding what's going on. The other situation, which was to me very harrowing, is one of the young girls is 28. Her name is Ola. Ola also has her mother with her, Tamara, who's 60. And then at the time they left, she had a 9-month-old with her, little girl. And so they were actually in a bomb shelter. They lived a little bit more east of Kyiv. I don't remember exactly what the community's name was, but they were living down under in a bomb shelter, and the only time they would come up would be to boil water. The whole city had lost its electricity because the Russians had cut the electrical lines coming into the town or the city. They had no gas lines that ran into the town, so there was no way to heat anything. And she had a little baby on formula, so she said she would go up a couple of times a day, and you know, they had a little fire pit that somebody would build a fire, and she would heat the hot water so she could mix formula just to be able to feed her baby. And that lasted for a few weeks. So, she was contacted by the other group that had made its way to Maria's sister's house in Poland and said, here, we've got a spot for you. See if you can get here. So they eventually got there too.
It's amazing. Just, you know, it's not simple. I'm going to leave a war-torn nation and live in a city and become a refugee. All that is, in the abstract, so difficult to comprehend, let alone when you hear specifics about what they went through.
Yeah. So for about 2 weeks, they stayed with this one sister, Maria's sister, who already had lived in Poland in a small apartment. There were, the sister had a child too, so there were, I think, a total of 12 or 14 of them living in a very, like a 12 by 12 room. It did have a bathroom and some kind of a community kitchen that they could go up and use. So, you know, but they were safe and they all were friends and they all knew each other and they made the best of it. But meanwhile, Grant had contacted them and said, where are you? You know, I've got this house. I want to try to bring you back here. He bought them plane tickets from Paris. So they made their way over the next 2 weeks through train and various methods from Warsaw to Paris, France, to Charles de Gaulle Airport. Some of the trains were slow, didn't arrive exactly when they were supposed to. When they got to Charles de Gaulle, the plane had already left that their tickets were for. And of course, they had some dollars with them, but they didn't have enough to buy new plane tickets. So for 3 days, they were in the airport with trying to figure out what to do, pleading with Air France to please, you know, let them fly. They had these original tickets, but they had missed the flight. So eventually Air France did allow them to board and gave them seats. They flew to Mexico. We all heard about some of the groups that went to Mexico to come across the border that way. And Grant met them in Mexico City, took him up through Tijuana. They were only in Tijuana for about a day. They said there was a huge encampment there of Ukrainian people trying to find a way to get across the border. But since he already was their sponsor, he was able to get them across. They spent a couple of days in San Diego just to recuperate. And then he flew them back across the United States to to Atlanta, then to Knoxville, and then brought them into Oak Ridge. So that's how they got here. When they got here, I guess through Grant's connections, they had a whole garage full of furniture that had been filled up with donated furniture. Their kitchen was fully stocked.
I love hearing that, because that was the obvious question is,
And then over the next week,
what was the response of the city to their arrival? And it's they were already anticipating their arrival.
Somehow, yes, that was before I knew them. And then right after they got here, Kern United Methodist Church called and said, we are closing out our house that we've had for our pastor. We have 3 bedroom suits full of furniture. I'm going to send you pictures if they could use any of it. And so we filled in with what they needed, a few dressers and other pieces besides just beds with those pieces. And then we've had other churches. The Christian church out in West Oak Ridge was closing or being sold. They called and said, they can have anything we have here. They actually didn't need much, but I went and got a huge bookcase that could be a bookcase for toys. They offered everything that they had in their kitchen and all, but they really felt like we've had some individuals. We had one lady call and say, I bet they could, with so many people there, I bet they can use an extra refrigerator. I'm going to buy one from Home Depot and have it sent to their house.
Oh, see, I love that kind of stuff. And it warms my heart. For those of you who know, I was pastor at Kern for a time.
Yes.
So I want to celebrate Kern and Will Connor, what he's doing there. Celebrate First Christian and what Steve Sherman has done.
Yes, I mean, and then Grace Lutheran has met also so many needs. For one, two of them that didn't speak English hardly at all have been taking classes at Grace Lutheran on a very regular basis, and they're getting much better. Not only do they understand, but they're beginning to speak in sentences, which has been great.
It's a shame that they'll speak like Lutherans, but other than that, that's a wonderful thing.
That's right. The other wonderful things that Grace Lutheran has done in August for their community fund that they take up money for and their offerings, they designated it for the Ukrainian families, and they had a couple of large gifts that came in, and they were actually through those able to pay for the applications for work permits cost $410 each, which is just an amazing fact to me. But the government organization that runs it is only run off of those funds. And so in order to even apply for work permits, they had to have those. So Grace Lutheran covered the cost of those 3 applications. Though there's 4 adults, Tamara, who is the 60-year-old grandmother, she has said she will not try to go out and work. She's going to stay home and keep her granddaughter. So Ola, who is 28, can go work. The other 2 girls are in their mid to late 30s. They're all young, beautiful people, and beautiful inside and out. I mean, they're just so sweet and appreciative of all the help they've gotten. So basically, all the furnishings that they have been donated. Habitat for Humanity, and this is through Greg Hinkle, one of our church members. Greg and Vicki have been so helpful in so many ways. They have figured out ways to help. In other words, they got given bicycles by some wonderful people in town, but some of them needed some repair. So Greg took the bicycles to somebody he knew could fix them and did that, and got a car seat so that the little ones could sit on the back of the parents when they could drive, when they could ride around. Greg also volunteers for Habitat for Humanity. And even though the house is very nice, it had a really rickety front porch that's probably been there. The house was probably built in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And the moms were actually a little afraid for the kids to come up and down because they were afraid something would give way. So they always went in and out through the garage entrance. But just over the last 2 weeks, Greg has had Habitat for Humanity there, and they have rebuilt their front porch. It's wonderful, and they all are so proud of it. And so now we can go in and out of our front porch, and it's safe.
I love just how all, I mean, what you're describing is an entire community.
It is.
Lutheran, I'm picking on Lutherans, but we all know it's a wonderful congregation. And Habitat, which is supported by all the different ministries and churches in the area, and the Hinkles. So many, I mean, they're great representatives of what I'm sure is a large number of people who have worked hard to make this happen.
It's pretty amazing. I do worry though that if they're taking ESL classes at the Lutheran Church, then they might learn that sola scriptura is an English word, and I wouldn't want that to happen.
No, you know.
That's Latin. It's not English. Sola scriptura. Hey, it's time for that. It's time for us to, you know, take a little break and make that nod towards our sponsor today. Mark, tell us just a little bit about our sponsor today.
I'm so excited. Here we are celebrating all these different denominations of Christian churches in the Oak Ridge area. We have a wonderful Oak Ridge Ministerial Association. So much interaction. I know the pastors of so many congregations. And after a few weeks ago, when we talked about the Church of Christ in the background, that the other Steve Martin, podcaster.
You know, it's amazing that there's another Steve Martin.
I know. Amazing enough. And then the Church of Christ contacted us and said, hey, we love what you guys are doing. We want to be supportive. So they are our sponsors for the day.
All right. Yeah. So we're going to read the script because they sent us a script. And this is really good stuff. And we're going to, you know, it basically, can the church be saved? That's the name of this podcast, is brought to you today by Church of Christ Grocery Stores. Do you ever buy groceries, Mark?
Rarely, but yes, we do in our home.
Okay, well, Church of Christ Grocery Stores, they say, where we only sell food mentioned in the New Testament. This is a great idea.
I love this. A holy franchise.
I love this idea. If you think our worship services without musical instruments are inspiring, you're going to love our supermarkets. No fruits, nuts, and vegetables are available, but our butcher shop is amazing. We carry fish, beef, lamb, and even locust. Yum. Mm. When's the last time you had some good locusts, Mark?
Oh, well, you know, Christmas dinner. Who doesn't have locusts?
And wild honey.
It's John the Baptist.
You're going the John the Baptist
route. That's right.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I love a good meal of locusts and wild honey from time to time. Just to remind you, the New Testament doesn't mention stovetops, ovens, or microwaves. Just cooking over an open fire. How nice. Yeah. Yeah. So pick up a load of wood today as you shop for eggs, milk, and vinegar. Who doesn't want pickled eggs and barbecue every night?
I know I do.
Oh, sounds so good. Church of Christ Grocery Stores, where you can shop by candlelight because the gospel doesn't mention light bulbs.
And don't expect to find a bathroom there either. Let me just point that out. No bathrooms in the New Testament. That's not mentioned.
I don't know what to do with this, Mark.
We just want to thank Church of Christ Grocery Stores to be with us today.
It's so nice, especially, and I commend our listeners to go back a couple of weeks. You know, you if you've subscribed to this podcast, which I'm coming after you if you haven't. And you should be very, very, very afraid if that's the case. if you've subscribed, you can go back a couple of weeks and hear and listen to the podcast where our guest was, Stephen D. Martin. That's the same as my name, spelled the same way. His name is Dean, though. Isn't that funny? Stephen Dean.
Dean Martin.
Martin. Get it?
Rat Pack connection.
You know, I'm not telling you my middle name because I hate it so much. But anyway,
Dwayne's not that bad.
Oh, thank you so much, Roger. Roger. We know too much about each other. So I love Steve because he's got this history. He's got this background that he's trying to deal with. And basically, it's one that we all deal with. I think we all have to grow in our faith over time. And some of us have more growth to do than others. He is definitely struggling with faith in some really interesting ways and being very public about it. So I would commend you that to you. And if you want to check out some good Church of Christ shtick, that's a good way to do it. Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, when we talk about growing in the faith and growing in our awareness of who God calls us to be. Quite frankly, I think Judy nailed it earlier when she said in a meeting this family, these families from Ukraine, she felt God say, you need to make this connection. Part of growth, it really is just what she is describing, responding to the need that you meet in the community, acting out of that love for God that moves us to love other people.
I think that a life of faith prepares you for those moments where you see it and you know in that instant, without any question, without any doubt, yeah, that's it. I got to be involved in that. And you don't think about, oh, what if, you know, you don't think about the risk you're taking potentially. You just know. You know that from the, you know, the bottom of your heart that this is the moment. So I think, Judy, I mean, can you relate to that? Is that?
Yeah, I can. I can. Thank you. And that's sort of the way I felt. I do want to say I'm certainly not the only one that is very involved with helping. I'm just a network of people. I guess I've been the main connection with our church just because I brought it to the attention of our staff. And we organized them coming to actually speak to the fellowship class at the church, as well as, you know, some other entities that were spinoffs of that. Can I kind of update you on where they are now?
That is exactly my next question. I know that, I mean, United Way's been very much involved and so many different congregations, but where are they now? What's the current situation?
What we did early on is I realized that people were asking about how they could make donations to this family. So I talked to Grant Cephalo, their sponsor, and I said, Grant, I think we need to set up a bank account, probably with a local bank of some sort, so that people have a place to deposit money. So we talked to 10 Bank. They were getting a joint account with Grant at 10 Bank, and they issued them each debit card so that they would have local, you know, bank access. And 10 Bank said, we really want to be involved. How about if we put the first $1,000 into their account, and we'll call it the Ukrainian Family Refugee Account, and anybody from the community, if they want to donate $5 or $1,000, whatever, they can come and just donate into that account, and then they would have access to it. Well, that has happened, about maybe 6 weeks ago, they had as much as $5,000 in the account. So one of their biggest needs was getting some sort of transportation. Grant had a car, and he allowed them to use the car, and he had one of the girls insured under his policy. But one out of four drivers makes it a little challenging. So he still travels some, and so a lot of times he's gone for 2 weeks away from the house, out of the state, even working. And then sometimes he's home. And when he's home, he has a bedroom in the basement and all the other families are upstairs. There are four bedrooms upstairs, and they've just figured out ways to make it work with bunk beds and different, and it's basically all females upstairs. I do want to let you know that beyond the eight that originally arrived about 3 weeks ago, extended family, Tanya's sister-in-law and her two children arrived also, and they're also living in the same household. And then last week, Grant had arranged for another co-worker that he knew also in Ukraine to come, and her 12-year-old son came. Now, those two are not living with the family because really the house is full with the initial group of three. It's more than one family.
So,
there's three
families
that came, but they all knew each other. And then these last three were extended family for one of the girls. But the reason they came is one of the new girls is 18, and she was trying to get here in time to start Roan State this fall. But she didn't quite make it for the fall cutoff. She just got here too late to start classes. So she has been accepted, and she's going to start classes in January at the local Roan State campus. But in order to get her here to be able to admitted, other family members also had to come. It was very difficult to get her out of the country because Ukraine was not allowing any visas. Nonetheless, so now there are actually 13 of them here, split between two locations. But the big thing was getting another vehicle so that, one, they all had international driver's license, and I learned that apparently that's the way that area of Europe does it. They can go between countries, and their driver's license are all recognized. Two of the three that were going to get Tennessee driver's license just got them this week. That was a really big deal.
Yay,
they studied and studied, and they passed the test and took the driver's test, and they have been issued their temporary Tennessee driver's license, and one thinks she'll do fine when she retakes the test. So, you know, it's just the way we word things that's a little bit challenging, trying to understand the multiple choice questions and all of that. But anyway, two of the three now have their Tennessee driver's license, and they'll get the official one in a couple of weeks when it comes from the state. They were able to buy a used car from a gentleman from the Unitarian Church that happened to call and said, "Hey, I understand y'all are looking for a used car. I've got a 2005 Dodge van that I'm willing to sell." And so they had enough money in their account where they could buy that. And then we just got the title from it a couple of weeks ago. And another blessing is sometimes it's just who you happen to mention things to. But I had talked with one of our local car dealers here. I was getting my car serviced, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to be talking to one of the gentlemen that works for MIG Insurance this afternoon. Let me see if we can let them see if we can get them their company to help with paying for insurance for the two girls who are not insured, because when the title comes in, you know, we'll be." Anyway, that did work out. So MIG Insurance employees, actually the parent office is in Clinton. We have a branch office here in Oak Ridge. The employees got together, pooled, and bought the other two girls who needed to get car insurance so they could actually drive the car. Insurance, it was about $1,236, I think I remember seeing. But that was a gift that their employees.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, hearing you say, you use the word blessing in there, and that's exactly how I'm feeling as I hear all this, the perspective that this reminds us of. You know, having so many people in a house, we so easily would say, "Oh, gosh, that sounds so hard." No, when you are a refugee coming to a safe place, what a blessing to have a home. What a blessing. And I guess that's one of the questions I have for you is, what have you seen? What are the lessons you've learned? Just this whole experience, I'm sure it's impacted you.
Yeah, I've tried to imagine if I was sent to Ukraine or any other place where I did not speak the language, how difficult it would be, what efforts they have made to get better at their English, the girls that already spoke English. They intensely studied over the summer, took online courses so that they would be better prepared. When their children arrived, it was 3 weeks before school was out. Of course, they went and got their vaccinations first thing. They had vaccinations in Ukraine, but they didn't have the cards to prove it. So they went to the Anderson County Health Department, got their shot so that they could get admitted into school the last 3 weeks. We had one at Woodland and one at Jefferson Middle School, and they were scared to death because they didn't know a word of English other than hello and thank you, probably, as they went to school. But they came back the first day saying, "Everybody was so nice to us. We love it. The schools are beautiful. We're going to be okay." And they took summer school classes to better learn English and are really doing fine. So one or two of the girls actually now have joined a Girl Scout troop with Jerry Luckman. Got them involved. She's the leader. And so they're doing some extracurricular things. I think they're all very bright children, and they're very picking things up very quickly. And it's important to them to do well in school. But one of the main things I'm beginning to realize, in addition to just the challenges, one, you can sympathize with 13 people, or in their case, 11 people all in one household. Even when you are family, it's hard to get along when there's that many people there all together. I have been amazed watching them, how they have figured out how to make this work as a simulated family unit. They each divide up responsibilities. They are immaculate in their cleanliness. They're cleaning all the time when I happen to stop in and see them. There's always somebody fixing dinner for that night. They've divided up, you know, responsibilities. Somebody's doing laundry. Somebody's fixing the meals for that night. And just washing towels for 11 people to take showers is pretty amazing. But, you know, they realize, and for the first time a couple of days ago, I had a conversation with some of them that were there, and they said, we've realized when we first got here, we thought we might be here a few months and be able to go back. Then they've realized, well, maybe it's going to be a year, and then we'll go back. And they're realizing now that it's probably going to be longer. They might be here a couple of years because they said, we don't really have anything to go back to. The schools are destroyed. The infrastructure is not there. We would maybe not even have the jobs that we used to have to go back to. And we've realized that it may be a while before the war, even after the war ends, before we can return. They do talk to their husband.
I was going to say, I looked up this morning looking to that refugee number, and the statistics, exactly what you're saying, the economy in Ukraine has shrunk by more than 45% because of the invasion.
Yeah.
$113 billion in damage.
Yes.
To the infrastructure and the country. Think about it makes perfect sense that they're thinking it'll be a while before they can go back to invest back into Ukraine.
And I said, would you think about going back to Eastern Ukraine? And they said, oh, all the rest of Ukrainians are in Eastern Ukraine. They all fled to that direction. And they just said, you know, they're all just packed in there and living on top of each other because they were trying to escape the war. So what they need now is they're hoping to get their work permit soon. They applied in July. It was supposed to only be a month. It's been, of course, way more than a month now. But they did get called. The Bridge Refugee Services that you mentioned, they had been extremely helpful. And they actually provided people to take them to Nashville last week to get fingerprinted. And that was one of the latter steps in them getting work permits. So we're hoping that those come through soon. I think Tanya will have, when she's looked on the lab's website jobs, there seems to be several things that she thinks she probably is qualified for. The people that she actually worked for in Ukraine were part of Bechtel's situation. And, you know, Bechtel has been part of the management at the lab here in past years.
I mean, the Oak Ridge connections are just astounding to me, as we've talked about this. It's just amazing. I mean, Oak Ridge is such a unique community. There's not, you know, there are not very many places like it. And yet the connections between Oak Ridge, the work, the kinds of things that these folks have been involved in the past, it's just amazing.
Yes, it really is. And then the other two girls, it's spelled Maria, but she pronounces it Maja. Maja was an economist, and she actually worked for a drilling company as an administrative assistant. And she had maternity leave. I did learn that in Ukraine, they give them 3 years if they want it for maternity leave. That was amazing. But she had been back to work at the company that she had originally worked for about 3 or 4 months, I think, before the war broke out. And because her child had just turned three. And so she's willing to do anything. She said, I was an administrative assistant. I could be a secretary. I could keep books for somebody. Her language skills are very good. I can always understand what she's saying. Sometimes I have to talk a little slower for her to understand me, because I have a tendency to talk a little bit fast. And then the third girl, Ola, she was actually a professional coach in rhythmic gymnastics. And rhythmic gymnastics is an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
And Tanya's daughter, the 12-year-old daughter that's in middle school, was actually one of her students. So that's what their connection was. They had known each other for years because of the connection between Mira, Tanya's daughter, took gymnastics lessons from Ola. So she's hoping she can get associated with a gym. There are three gyms in Knoxville that have the bouncy floors, and that's what they're used to performing on. It's a combination of both dance and high skill gymnastics, but they use hoops and balls and ropes and things and flip them around and catch them, and it's a beautiful sport. It's one of the most artistic things that I always enjoy watching when I see the Olympics on TV.
Oh, that's exactly right. When it's one of those that you turn on and think, I'm not sure about this, and you end up watching 45 minutes of
Yes,
it.
And you go, really, oh, these are what athletes these girls are. So she's hoping, she's getting started with helping at a ballet studio here that they can also practice at for in off hours. But then she's hoping that maybe she can either develop a class or get hooked up with a gym. But of course, it required transportation. So that was, now that they've got the car and she just got her Tennessee driver's license, just out of safety, I was telling them, just drive in Oak Ridge right now, because if somebody rear-ends you in Knoxville, even if it's not your fault, and they're looking at your license and it's all written in Ukrainian, it may really cause some problems, you know. Now that they should have their Tennessee driver's license soon, and I think hopefully nothing will ever happen to them, but sometimes accidents just happen and they're not anything you instigate, you know. So
especially in Knoxville.
Right. These are the kinds of things I'm finding. One, they can always use donations to the 10 bank account, even the main branch or any of the branches. And the account is paired with United Way so that it is a 501c3 donation if that is important to somebody. Now, that's the only really what that's. That is the only United Way connection for them that I'm aware of, is just pairing on this bank account so that it would be a non-profit, you know, no donation. But what we're finding is they need, we've gotten them hooked up with the free dental services at Roan State. Their students do dental cleanings. But the challenge has been, you have to come in for 2 4-hour appointments to get your mouth cleaned once, because the students are slow as they're learning, you know, how to hone their skills. And one of the girls, Maria, actually had a really bad toothache a few weeks ago, and I went ahead and took her to Aspen Dental here in town, and they saw her and did x-rays, and she knew that she had a tooth that the root was turned sideways on. They had told her in Ukraine that at some point she'd have to have the tooth pulled. Well, the dentist couldn't get it out, so we had to go to an oral surgeon, which they made the appointment for that afternoon. And so she had to be put to sleep and had the tooth taken out surgically. And it was a $500 charge. So, you know, they don't have those kind of reserves where if too many of those kinds of expenses happen, you know, they need a continuous flow of money until they can get to work. Then Tamara, who is the 60-year-old, she has diabetes, and the free medical clinic here in Oak Ridge has seen her a couple of times, and I went with her once to take her, and they found out that she did have high blood pressure, so they put her on high blood pressure medicine. They adjusted her diabetes medicine to something that they felt like would be more appropriate. And then she also had a lesion on one of her feet, because, as you know, diabetics sometimes don't heal very well. So we've got a podiatry appointment on Monday that I'll be taking her to get her foot checked. But she also has a sore on the side of her nose that didn't heal. And it asked her how long it's been there, and she said for about a year. Well, that's always a sign of oftentimes a cancer of some sort. So medical professional that saw her at the free medical clinic said she was 99% sure it's basal cell carcinoma. She's going to need to have that taken off, but it's slow growing. But we do have an appointment for her at the Oak Ridge Dermatology Associates later in November for her to get that checked. She's probably going to have surgery for that, and that probably will not be covered. So it's those kinds of things that are just basic care. And they had health care was basically free in Ukraine. So the prices of what things cost here are very shocking to them.
Oh,
although
sure.
I really feel like, you know, they, like a couple of the girls have cavities, even though they were still getting dental care in Ukraine. And so it makes you wonder, you know, how good a care did they really get there, even though it was free or low cost? Because when the girl that needed to have her tooth pulled, I said, well, how much would it have cost in Ukraine to get your tooth pulled? And she did some calculations and she said $11. Well, to get her tooth pulled here, it was initially going to be $128. And she said, I can pay for that. I still have money on my credit card. I can pay for that. But then the $500 cost was, you know, a little bit of a surprise. So,
well, and what you're describing are just the ongoing costs of life.
That's right.
As this community has embraced these families, I think what we're just becoming very aware of is working with refugee, and Steve can speak to this more than I can. It's not just a, wow, we have a weekend to focus on these people. It really is opening our lives and our hearts.
It's a huge commitment. Yeah. Yeah.
And a good one, and worth the blessing, worth the effort.
I got stories about how good it is. I mean, it is the most, doing the first refugee sponsorship that I did when I was a pastor in Unicoi, Tennessee, of all places, tiny little town. Just the most rewarding thing. You know, when we got really good people, who had really had a hard time, and they were ready to go, man. They were ready to live life, and it's just amazing.
I worry a little bit about refugee fatigue, because I've heard a few people, not at our church, but in other organizations that have said, oh, let's get them to come speak at our such and such meeting. And somebody else will say, oh, we had them come. Let's focus on somebody else right now. Or, you know, and I've realized that not everybody might have the same passion that I do, that the needs are ongoing. And so I've got to be careful about that and, realize that we can't, not everybody's going to give them free services, and that's why we need a pool of money that can provide. When they first got here, and I went to Altrusa that first day and explained that they were here, and I just talked to them that morning, and one of the little 3-year-old had a temperature, and I said, if anybody has any connection with somebody that can see him today, he's had a fever for a couple of days, and it's not COVID, but you know, there's other things that you get sick from. And, you know, they hadn't been here too long, and he'd probably picked up something in their travels. But Carol Welch, whose husband Billy Welch used to be at the children's clinic, he had retired, but she came up after the meeting and just said, let me make a phone call. So by that afternoon, they had an appointment for him, and somebody saw him there free and gave him the medicine, and he got better, you know. So, but those have been wonderful blessings that just, if we're just letting let people know what the needs are that have been answered. Another very generous man from the Sunset Rotary Club. The Rotary Club has also given them $1,000, and he went and just bought them 3 iPads and gave one to each family out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah. Love that. Love that.
How do people make donations? What's the fastest, easiest way you can say, here's
where go to 10 Bank. It should be any of the branches, but the main branch is easier because they're very familiar with it. Drive through or inside and just say, I would like to make a donation to the Ukrainian Refugee Family Fund. And I think if you get any part of it being a refugee family donation, that it'll get into the right account.
That's great. That's great. Incredible. Gosh, thanks
it
so
is.
Much, Judy. Thanks so much. We're at the end of the hour, so, you know, we got to wrap up. Mark, what's your takeaway, man?
I hate to wrap up because, as you can hear, the energy in Judy's voice, it's a passion for her. And that, I mean, it reconnects us when we hear people who are passionate about caring, about reaching out, about doing the right thing. It reminds us of our own passion. So thank you for that. Thank you for all the good work you've done. Thank you for representing our congregation in so much of this. We appreciate you, and it's an obvious kingdom work for you, and that's a good thing for all of us.
Yeah, I could go on and 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 on about my experience resettling refugees. And what's, I think, interesting to note, I asked at the very beginning what the distinction was here, that these are not, they're refugees, but they're under a different program, and there's some limitations to that program. So there's just still a lot of... No matter what, there are kind of government, you know, bureaucratic hoops that have to be jumped through and hurdles to follow. And so it's never really, it's just not easy. I remember talking one time to Sue Byrne, who had moved to, she'd lived in Switzerland for 3 years, and she came back at the end of that time, and I said, Sue, what the heck, man? Why did you leave Switzerland? You had a job there. You had a life. You were there. And she said the most wonderful, memorable, wise words. She said, you know, Steve, every day it was just walking uphill. And I thought, oh, yeah, I get it. It is hard. It's very hard. Even if you're fleeing a war, it is so incredibly difficult to get going, and the difficulty lasts for a very long time. All right. So, thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Can the Church Be Saved? I think listening to Judy, you know, if we're gonna put this on a meter, you know, a scale of 1 to 10 about whether the church can be saved or not, I'm gonna put it up there at maybe a 9, 9.5, you know, maybe 9.9, you know. This is the good stuff. I was thinking about it this morning. You know, pastors do this kind of stuff. Clergy do this kind of stuff. I was thinking about the parable of when Jesus talks about Lazarus and the poor man and Lazarus. You know, Lazarus is the rich man who's feasting mightily and heavily and just living the life. You know, and then there's the rich man, and then there's, I get it confused. Mark, which is it? Who's the rich man?
Yeah,
Lazarus?
The rich man is the one that's feasting, and Lazarus is the poor man that is covered in sores. See? And they both die, and the rich man is suffering in torment, and Lazarus is in the bosom of Sarah and Abraham.
And you can go back and read that, but the a lot of us get caught up in going, well, gosh, you know, if we're rich, then, you know, this is a fairly condemning kind of story about us. But it's really not about us. It's about the poor, and about the way we depend upon the poor. It's a way of seeing the world from the kind of the underside. And I think that's what we're always called to do, right? We're always called to see what it's not so much about what's happening with us, because we're on the whole, we're okay, we're good, but there are a lot of people in the world that are not. And what do we do with that? And I love this story and this effort because of all of that stuff. So everybody, you know, listen up and subscribe to the podcast, or I'm coming after you. We are going to have another episode next week, drop about the same time, and we're going to have another fabulous sponsor, I'll tell you that much. It's really, I am so excited about this, I can't even utter a word of it yet, because it's very much, you know, it's on the down low, but this one is going to be huge, huge. And we're going to have another great guest. So thank you all for listening and hanging in there. And thanks especially to Judy and crew, who are doing such amazing kingdom work.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Judy.